Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
They have fallen into the Pat Riley trap of disease of me. You paid Daniel Jones, but now you're not going to pay Saquon. They won 9 freaking games and beat a shitty Minnesota team and got their ass kicked. This is the tip of the iceberg that if Daboll's got to nip this in the bud, because if he doesn't, it's just going to magnify.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael Lombardi sending a last-second text message, getting information. Draft season is here, buddy. Everyone's starting to echo what we've been talking about now, huh?
You know, yeah. Funny how that works? It's kind of funny how that all works out, but it's all good. You know, I think to me, it's not like, it gives us credibility in the world of, I'm not trying to be the first guy to report something. I'm just trying to be credible when I know something. And I love how Twitter reacts that you don't know a goddamn thing. It's always good. Those guys do. They're geniuses with erasers. It's incredible. But there's so much going on. You know, there is so much going on. And I think when we started out, we talked about Houston. And I wrote this column for VSiN about, look, I'm not saying they're not going to draft a quarterback, Femi. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that they will explore all their options. I think we tend to be so focused on today, mock drafts. They need this, pick this player. I don't dispute that the Texans need a quarterback. But the problem you get into is if you've graded Kenny Pickett a grade last year and you grade C.J. Stroud a grade similar to Kenny Pickett and you pick Stroud at 2, what are you doing?
You're reaching.
You're reaching, right. It shows you're reaching. Or what people don't do enough of is go back and study the other grades you had on players. Now, you say, well, you could be wrong on Kenny Pickett's grade. Well, you watched him play pro football. I don't think you were wrong on Kenny Pickett's grade. Did the Steelers pick him too early? Probably they did. But it was 20 overall. So it's not, you know, they didn't pick him 2. You turn the card in at 2, you got to make sure that you're getting a top 5 player. If not, you're just reaching. And I think that's the conversation that you got to kind of have that's not discussed outside of draft rooms, that's really prevalent within the draft room.
The scenario that's being kind of kicked around here is that, assuming Bryce Young goes number 1 to the Carolina Panthers, Houston potentially could be interested in Will Anderson, maybe Tyree Wilson, one of those edge rusher guys. Do you think that's what the direction that they would go? Or maybe they even move out of the pick if somebody
I think if they could move out of the pick, they might. Mm-hmm. I think that's certainly an option. As I reported, there is a lot of dynamics going on in Houston. I think D'Amico Ryans has a lot more say in the draft than probably other coaches, David Culley or Lovie Smith. I think he's kind of got his blueprint in there. It's different than Nick's blueprint because, remember, Nick has hired 2 coaches as Nick Cesario. He's hired 3 coaches that don't fit his profile of what he has been accustomed to, right? So when you're in New England, you know, edge rushers are not, they're in demand. Chandler Jones, they drafted, but they have to play within the framework. Whereas I think if you look at what he did in San Francisco, he knows the value of a defensive line. And if you have a chance to get a Wilson from Texas Tech, now he's going to have his foot checked out because he had a broken bone in his foot. To me, 6'6", 275, highly athletic. His tape's really good. You know, would you take him? Will Anderson has more popularity than reality. You know, he's great. Will Anderson's great. Except when you ask him about his tape and some of the inconsistencies, I see that. Everybody sees it, but nobody says it, right? Everybody sees it, but they don't say it. Like, where did you feel him in a game? So I do think that. And look, I'm not saying they won't take Stroud. I don't know. I think Stroud's an interesting player because I think this week's going to determine a lot. Stroud's not, I don't want this to be read wrong, Stroud's kind of has a personality that you're going to have to really ingratiate yourself to. He's going to have to trust you. There's going to be a little things that have to work out with Stroud before you could take him.
You've been saying that now for a little bit, and the way I kind of interpret that is that maybe he has a healthy bit of skepticism initially when he meets somebody.
I think he's hard to coach, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. I think he's hard. There's some guys that are hard to coach. It's like, you know, the horses. Like, I've been reading this incredible book about the greatest gambling story ever told about these two guys who spend all this money on the first female to run in the Kentucky Derby, and they go to Mexico and they put all this money on, and they're worried about if the horse wins, are they going to get their money out? Well, this female horse, Winning Colors, she was volatile. Like, she was really volatile. She bit other horses. Mm-hmm. She had a personality that the trainer who the groomsman, whoever the guy was that's always with her, was with her since she was at birth, okay? Now, I'm not comparing CJ Stroud to a horse. I'm talking about temperament here.
Stroud is not Pai Omai.
I'm talking about, thank you, very good. I got so much for you on that, okay? I went to the Mob Museum, and I'm going to Florida this week, and I'll be back Saturday.
Go to Boca. No,
there you go. You better go to the Mob Museum within 10 days. I promise. That's your mandate. So it's the greatest thing in Vegas. Forget Celine Dion. Forget all that. It is the greatest thing in Vegas. I can promise you. If you're listening to this podcast today and you love mobsters, go to the Mob Museum. It is the greatest time. I spent 3 hours. I could have spent another 10. And I'm going back. I'm going back before I leave. Anyway, let's go back to Winning Colors. So her temperament was challenging. But the one guy that was with her all the time, kind of she endeared himself to her. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little bit like Stroud's got to have that relationship with you so that he can take coaching. See, we all think that players are like we are. We'll take coaching. Well, they're not always like that. Some players don't believe coaching. Some players are like, you're just trying to mess me up. Like Markel Fultz with the 76ers, you know, like that's part of his problem was not taking coaching, or maybe it was bad coaching. So I think you're going to have to endear yourself with Stroud's going to have to trust you. And then if you get that, you can really maybe grow. But if you don't get that, it might be a little bit hard. You may get kicked and it becomes a problem. It doesn't make him the wrong player. It basically comes back to you as a leader. What's your adaptability? What's your ability to figure out? One of the great strengths of Vince Lombardi, when you read all the things that you read about him, was his ability to understand humans and what one player needed and what one player didn't. And I think that has been lost.
Yeah, being able to press all the right buttons. I want to get back to the point that you brought up with D'Amico and Ryan's having more say than previous Texans head coaches. Now, John McClain, who is very dialed into the Houston area, was a longtime writer covering back when they were the Houston Oilers, covered the Houston Texans.
He's great.
He said that Nick Caserio is not going anywhere after the draft, despite speculation on the contrary. Caserio, we believe that he should be safe this year here, but it almost, the way you're framing it, sounds like he's maybe losing a little bit of say.
Well, I think it's more collaborative than it ever been before. I mean, remember, Nick was in the press box his first year with David Culley.
He had the headset on.
He had a headset on. So he had control over everything. And there's a lot of conversation around that maybe it's more Nick that doesn't want to be there than the Texans don't want it to be there. Mm. You know, that doesn't necessarily always mean that, you know, maybe it's just not the, maybe Nick feels like it's not the right fit, or maybe Nick feels like, and I haven't talked to Nick, so this is all just speculation on the street. Maybe Nick feels like it's not comfortable for him in that environment. Maybe he just doesn't even like the job of being this guy, of being completely in control. So, but I do think D'Amico's going to have a large say in what happens. I think there's no denying that.
This draft would get really interesting if the Texans do indeed pass on the quarterback. I know we've talked a lot about the quarterbacks. We'll talk more about them in depth. I've been reading up on the manual, the grading system there. We're going to start to put some grades on these QBs here. We're going to see who the 7-0s are and who the 6-5s
are. Do you see how it's different when you do it with the grading system that way than when 100%. You do it with, I think he should go in the first round?
Slap around on him and then move on and forget about it.
And then worry about it. Then go back and look at it next year.
Trubisky, first rounder. All right, let's continue on. That's kind of how it's rolled in the draft Knicks circles there. But we love the draft Knicks. That's one of the reasons why we have all these jobs. Let's talk about Adam Schefter and his report on his podcast, I believe it was, talking about Aaron Rodgers. And he says, it doesn't sound like a trade will happen before the NFL draft. We've talked about how that benefits New York. Green Bay seems like they're also content, or maybe that's just a leverage ploy right now and they're not content, but word on the street is that they're content waiting as well. And the two sides are kind of dug in and in fact, haven't spoken in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I mean, look, if I'm Joe Douglas, I know I'm getting the player. Like, I know I'm getting it. Like, I have all the leverage here. So letting the draft come and go and using my picks, letting Thursday come, by Friday, it'll heat up. I mean, you know, at some point, oh, Mr. Murphy's going to get a little nervous here. Because remember, Murphy's controlling this, right?
Yep.
I mean, everybody just, it's hilarious how people think he's not. Poor Goots. He's over there having to take the bullets, you know. Yes. And Murph and Russ Ball are controlling this thing behind the scenes. You know, they're the ones echoing, this is what we're going to do. I keep saying this to people all the time. Nobody understands it or seems to grasp that the Packers organization changed dramatically the day Murphy walked in there. He wants to get in the Hall of Fame. He has an agenda. Rodgers knows what the agenda is. Rodgers is resentful of the agenda. But once Ted Thompson got sick, once Ted Thompson had to leave, Murph splintered it. He splintered it. You know, and I use the word splinter because it's kind of what JFK did when after the Bay of Pigs, he splintered the CIA. And that's where Alan Dulles and John Bissell and all these guys, they got flown out. He was going to take the CIA and reduce it. And he wanted control of it. And that's what a lot of people feel like was the impetus behind he's the problem within the government. And so now you say, well, that's not possible. Yeah, that if you understand history, yeah, that is. But it happens in every other country. Why would it happen in ours? Okay, so my point is he splintered this. So he made everybody report to him. He controls this. And he's going to get nervous on Friday because the Packers, they're not going to have extra picks. They're going to wait for the next pick. And here's what I'll say all the time. Every player that gets traded for a pick is a pick is a player for player. It's not a player for a pick. It's a player for player. So when I trade you a pick, you're picking a player there.
Yep.
Okay, so if you give me your second and I pick somebody in the second round, I traded Aaron Rodgers for that player in the second round.
Man, it feels like the Green Bay has kind of botched this from a leverage standpoint.
Because you know why? Because you got a guy who's operating behind the scenes. You know, they have to go. If Goot had the ability to make the deal, he probably would have made it. But he has to go. Goot's negotiating on two fronts. He's got to negotiate with the Jets, and then he's got to turn around and negotiate with Murph to get the okay. That's a hard fucking job.
Sounds like a hard job. It's probably why we don't have a deal so far here, even though it's been pending for about, a month now? Rodgers heading to the Jets, but I'm sure we'll find out very soon. Maybe it's draft week that happens, or maybe it's the week after, or perhaps training camp. Only time will tell. We'll talk about another team in New York. We talked a lot of gangrene. Let's talk Big Blue on the other side. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
All right, New York, New York. That's where all the action is this NFL offseason. The New York Jets, of course, looking to complete the trade to acquire Aaron Rodgers. But how about their roommates, the New York Giants? The Giants are in this interesting situation because reports came out yesterday that both running back Saquon Barkley and defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence are planning to skip the offseason program, which actually begins today. I mean, this no offseason, talk about that. But Barkley is not going to sign his franchise tag, and Lawrence is going to skip it because contract talks have kind of broken down. They haven't come to any sort of an agreement here. It's starting to become a thing here. Like, well, I'm curious to get your take on if this is a big deal for the Giants.
I think everybody focuses on Barkley won't sign his tender. Well, we all know that's bullshit, right? We all know that unless he wants to be Le'Veon Bell, he's not turning down the money, right? And we all know football players, and to quote the great George Young from the Giants organization, football players play football. So eventually they're going to play. So, but I think the bigger issue here, Femi, is this is more about Pat Riley's The Disease of Me. This is the challenge that Brian Daboll has, and he should have known it the minute he walked off the field in Philadelphia when he got his ass kicked by the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
He got his ass kicked by the Eagles, okay? And so he walks in there, and he's got this delicate balance of, we've made progress, but we just got our ass kicked. So how do I treat the offseason? How do I say we did good? And how do I say we got to do a lot better? How do I do that? And what's happened here, and this is not on Daboll, but this is just human nature. They have fallen into the Pat Riley trap of disease of me. So if you look at Riley, and if you read anything on the great Pat Riley, is, you know, he talks about the disease of me is basically seven tangents. It's inexperience in dealing with sudden success. It's chronic feeling of underappreciation, right? It's paranoia over being cheated out of one's rightful share, okay? It's resentment against the compensation of partners, okay? It's personal effort mustered solely to outshine a teammate. It's a leadership vacuum resulting from the formation of cliques and rivalries. And it's feeling of frustration even when the team performs successfully. Every one of those, I could give you an example within the Giants. Okay, let's go to six. A leadership vacuum resulting in the formation of cliques and rivalries. Okay? You paid Daniel Jones, but now you're not going to pay Saquon. You're not going to give Dexter. Everybody in that locker room knows the reason they won wasn't because of Daniel Jones. He had something to do with it, but he didn't carry the team. The players know this. You can't con the players. They know this. And so there it is, right? Chronic feeling of underappreciation. Saquon feels underappreciation. Daniel doesn't, but Saquon does. Dexter does. And so this is what happens. And they didn't win enough, and they're not good enough as a team to be able to kind of go through this. Like, they didn't win a championship. They won nine freaking games and beat a shitty Minnesota team and got their ass kicked. They're not good enough to have the disease of me. And to me, if I were Brian, this would be the first slide I would show the team at the first team meeting. I would say, fellas, let's just get this straight now. We got our asses kicked. This is a new year. We got to rebuild the program. And here's what we're going to try to avoid. And this isn't going to happen in the locker room. You're going to have to attack this. Because when they gave all that money to Daniel Jones, and you listen to John Mara, he was delighted to give money to Daniel Jones. I would have been kicking and screaming. He was delighted. He loves Daniel Jones. He's entitled to his opinion on Daniel Jones. I don't see it. Now, he sees the upside. I don't. I see they got to manage him. I could be completely wrong. That being said, Daboll's got to do a better job of managing this moving forward, or else this is just going to splinter.
It almost feels like Mara feels validated in their selection of Daniel Jones by giving him that second contract.
It does.
It's like, see, hey, we got the quarterback position right with our draft pick, despite what everybody said on draft.
I mean, in fairness to John Mara, for the whole Gettleman administration, he was taking shit for all these picks, and for good reason. His team over the last 5 years was horrible.
They were the worst team in the league record-wise.
But just because they won nine games doesn't make them they're on their way. This is what happens to organizations. It's called competitive stamina. You've got to have competitive stamina to reach and go further. And you've got to have people helping you in the building because everything is tied to the contracts. Because when I give you money, I'm saying you are the reason we won. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that verbally, but I'm saying it in the locker. That's the way the players view it.
Actions speak loud.
And this is, to me, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is the tip of the iceberg that if Daboll's got to nip this in the bud, because if he doesn't, it's just going to magnify.
Now, the Giants, I think, were in a tough spot with this because of the timing of all of this. Like, both Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley were set to become unrestricted free agents. I have my opinion out there on Daniel Jones. I don't think he's very good, but they obviously think he's good enough to warrant this contract. They had to get something done with one of them, or they could have tagged him, but then Barkley would then become an unrestricted free agent. So they chose to get one of them done. They went the Daniel Jones route instead of the Barkley route there. Now they have Barkley for that $10 million number, which he's not going to sign for less than that, because that's what the tag is going to give him, is that $10 million per year.
But here's what you could have done. You let Jones just go. If you would have just let Jones go, mm-hmm. and tagged Barkley, not do Jones's deal before, let him go out and see the market. Now, whatever the market is, he's coming back to you with his deal. The market, then you could tell the team, we had to pay him because the market said this. Right now, the narrative is we gave him that. There was no competition. Mm-hmm. See, the players know this in the locker room. They understand the dynamics of, you know, if we let him out there and I get him back, that's what the market bared. We let him, water seeks its level. Tag Barkley, try to get Barkley. Look, just say to Saquon, I mean, you got to be honest with Saquon. Look, Saquon, you're a great player. We hope to sign you a long-term deal, but you got to prove that you can stay healthy. You got to prove that you can play you got to make an effort to be a 17-game starter. We're going to limit this is your role, what's going to be. It's all about honesty. It's all about transparency to the players. And when you if you would have let Daniel Jones go to the market, you could say, well, the Colts would have signed him. He would have come back to you and said, okay, here, this is what the Colts are offering me. Mm. You can't fear free agency. I learned that. I did early in my career. I was scared to death of it, and that's why you overpaid players.
And that could be the situation the Giants found themselves in here with Daniel Jones. On the Dexter Lawrence side of it, because he's also in this as well, seeking another contract, I'm sure he has seen the big money deals that a lot of these defensive tackles have been getting. Jeffrey Simmons just signed one last week. Deron Payne got one. All these defensive tackles are getting one, and Lawrence is coming off an all-pro season. He was second team all-pro this past year, 25 years old, still very young. I don't think he's in the mood of giving any discounts, at least compared to his contemporaries. He's going to want that $20-plus million, maybe even $22, $23
million. When he puts his hand in the dirt and he looks at number 99 next to him, he said, I'm better than that guy.
100%.
You paid that guy all the money.
100%.
Again, go back to the disease of me. You're comparing yourself to your contemporaries. You paid this guy, you're not paying me. I'm way better than this guy.
Yeah.
Right?
He's got a good argument, too.
Oh, I can't argue with him. So, again, this is what happens. And here's the problem. We didn't win enough. We made one playoff. We had a playoff game. We're in a shitty conference. There's no quarterbacks. We beat a bad Minnesota team on the road. Great. Right? That's great. We've gotten our doors blown off by Philadelphia at home and in a playoff game. We barely beat them with a guy who's now the quarterback coach in Denver. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so like they had Gardner Minshew. We barely beat them. And we were playing Davis Webb, who's the quarterback coach. I mean, I don't even know how that game was relevant. Like that, to me, that game's just dismiss it, right? Although Jalen Hurts played in that game.
Yeah, Hurts played, yeah.
Yeah, he played in that game. But my point is, it was like, the next week when it really mattered, you got your ass kicked. There were 2 weeks later. So I think this is about how you handle it and the messaging you send. I think it's, you know, I'm not second guessing, because I think to me, you've got to be willing to say to players, look, this is not what we're doing.
We've identified the problem, but what's the solution? What do you think?
I think it's all on Daboll's desk. He's going to have to address it. He can't ignore it. He's going to have to sit there, and Joe Shine, they're going to have to address it. He's going to sit there with the team and say, fellas, look, we did nothing last year. We've accomplished nothing. Like, if you guys think we've accomplished something, great. But if we start passing out money left and right here to players, but once they did it to Daniel Jones, they had to know this was coming.
What do we say? Money sometimes causes problems.
No doubt. You know, and nothing says I'm sorry better than money. I took a picture of Arnold Rothstein over at the Mob Museum because I love that quote. Nothing says I'm sorry better than money, Femi.
Yeah. Well, Dexter Lawrence is waiting for his apology, as is Saquon Barkley, coming up later on this offseason. I think it's a fascinating thing with this Giants team that is trying to take that next step. And we talk about how that step is always the most difficult one in the NFL, going from good to great.
It's hard.
And they're in a division that's very difficult. And oh, by the way, they won one game in the division last year.
And money makes it even harder.
Money definitely does make it harder here. The Indianapolis Colts, real quick, we'll have a couple minutes left here in this segment. Want to get to it. Shane Steichen claiming that they are no longer vying for Lamar Jackson, and they're focused on the draft. So we're hearing more and more messaging from Indianapolis that, hey, we're in draft mode. Lamar's not really being talked about in the building here. Do you think that's posturing, or do you actually believe that's true?
I think it's true. I think they have their mind set on, you know, I think they're doing exactly what they did with a rookie, with a rookie quarterback that they did with a veteran. You know, I think they're going to try to draft one. They're going to force one. I don't think there's anybody in their draft room that can honestly stand on this table and say, we got our guy. I think they've locked themselves into a trap. And if they take Richardson at 4, thinking they've got a young Jalen Hurts, are they sure he's going to work hard? Are they sure he has the drive? Richardson, in talking to teams this week that have had him in their building this week, Richardson's a good kid. He's smart. He's not a dumb kid. He's smart. I would say he's not an alpha male. He doesn't have that Kobe Mamba mentality. He doesn't have the... He doesn't have the inertia to just drive. He's been so gifted naturally, so gifted, that he doesn't have the drive to go out there and really dig deep into. He doesn't know how to dig deep into himself. And he's been giving things so often in his career that he hasn't had any stumbling blocks to it. I think that's the challenge. You know, I think that because that element is going to be the most critical component to whether he's successful as a quarterback.
Richardson, and I've read, I think it was an ESPN column where teams talked about how, hey, he's not necessarily a gym rat, but we believe that he can actually get there.
Tell me one guy that just gets there. Tell me how that works. We'll talk about the other side of this break, but you tell me a guy who all of a sudden isn't a worker that became a worker. Well, you tell me a guy that you should, you know, get in your bag of excuses and you find me a few of those guys. I don't know him. I would promise you, and you want to talk about this when we go on the break, I will promise you his psychological testing indicates that's not who he is.
Well, he did do well on the S2 cognition test, and we're going to talk about that test on the other side because another quarterback aced it, and it's probably the one that you're thinking here on the GM Shuffle.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
All right, Michael, let's talk a little S2 cognition test. Okay. For those of you who might not know, it's a little bit different than what we typically see during the draft process because everybody is familiar with the Wunderlich test, and you can even try the Wunderlich test online and all that stuff and see how you would measure up to all sorts of draft prospects from years past. But I think this S2 cognition test is really interesting. And what it is, the way it's described, I'm reading the article that was profiled on it, it's almost like a 40-yard dash for the brain. It's trying to gauge just, it's not an intelligence test, but it's more so like a reactionary test about how you see things and can you see things very quickly? Because famously, Brock Purdy last year knocked it out of the park. And the person who created the S2 cognition test said that, hey, the game will never be too fast for Brock Purdy. He might not succeed, but the game is not, it's not going to be because the game is too fast for him. And what the test actually is, and if I'm going to pull it up right now, it says that the exam lasts 40 to 45 minutes, performed on a specially designed gaming laptop and response pad that can record reactions in 2 milliseconds. And to put that in perspective, an eye blink lasts 100 to 150 milliseconds. So it's pretty much gauging how quickly do you react to stuff.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see the quarterbacks, and rumors have been put out there about which quarterbacks have succeeded and which ones might not have passed it or done very well. But Bryce Young at the top of the list shouldn't surprise anyone.
No, I mean, look, you see it on the tape, right? He's quick-minded. He's quick-footed. He knows where to go with the ball. He's got eyes behind the back of his head. It's one of the reasons why if you want to draft him, you believe that he's not going to get hurt because he has that ability to escape it. He has that ability to move an inch forward to avoid it. Like, all the conversation about Purdy, and I think Purdy, the game wasn't too big, but one of the things Purdy could have done to avoid an injury, if he would have worked the pocket when he got hit, he would have worked the pocket. And when we say work the pocket, that means climb the ladder in the pocket. You're working north and you're working up into the pocket. He might have avoided that contact. So look, I think these are all important testing. I think they are. We all teams do it. You want to test, and we did the what we call the TAP, Now, that's not, again, this is not black and white. This is all gray. Mm-hmm. So it just goes into the pile of, okay, here's where you are. And you want to be able to test work habits and competitiveness. What I think people really misconstrue a lot is if you have a kid who's competitive, right? You know, if you have a kid who's competitive who doesn't work hard, you can change that. If you have a kid who works hard who's not competitive, you can't change that. Mm. Okay? So it's the great Bob Knight line. You know, Bob Knight line talks about who's great competitors. Great competitors are people that when they play and they watch the rewind of what they played, they think they're going to win the game. You know, like, even though they lost, right? When they rewatch it again, they think they're still going to win. They're going to win because that's how competitive they are. And I think that's the question on Anthony Richardson. Is he competitive that doesn't really have innate work habits, or does he not have innate work habits who's moderately competitive? And that's the test you're going to have to figure out. That's the one. Like Bryce Young to me would be 5 in competitives on a scale of 1 to 5. He'd be, and he's 5 in work habits.
That's what you want.
That you want him in your building.
Yeah, that's what you want.
That's who you want in your building. Whereas some other guys are Jamarcus Russell. I can remember, you know, when I was echoed out of the room, and you know, I wasn't involved in that draft, but I was still employed by the Raiders. And so Lane Kiffin did not want to draft. He did not want to draft Jamarcus Russell. He wanted to draft Calvin Johnson. He saw all the flaws in Jamarcus Russell, not his talent, his work habits. Mm-hmm. So he would talk to me, you know, privately and said, like, how do I change this? And I'm like, well, look, you know, the tap on Jamarcus is a disaster. Mm. The tap was a psychological profiling testing that we did. We started in Cleveland with it. We carried it over. Bill does it in New England. And I did it in Cleveland. We do it. It's a psychological profiling test that Bob Troutwine, tremendous guy. He does. Now, he's not right all the time. And it's not the gospel. But it's an indication of a couple things. And Jamarcus was a disaster. And so I said, this verifies what you're saying. You're going to have to support yourself. But Al was never of the mind, now never believed psychological testing. He never thought it was, because that wasn't his world. You know, he didn't see it that way. Today, we're more apt to handle it. And, you know, I could see why Bryce Young is so high. It's interesting what C.J. Stroud would be. I don't see C.J. Stroud as being great on that test. Mm.
Well, Anthony Richardson, who we're talking about in the last segment, apparently knocked it out of the park, is what reports are saying. Sources are saying that. And for context, Mahomes did really well on this test. Josh Allen did really well. Brock Purdy did really well. My guy Justin Fields did really well on this test. Now, this test, it's been going on for about 7 years, at least from what I've read. It's not really indicative of, okay, if you do well on the test, you will be a really good quarterback. But I think more so is that if you don't do really well on this test, nobody who that has done poorly on this S2 cognition test has become a good quarterback. It's kind of my read on it.
So where's Levis?
We haven't seen it. I mean,
I don't think Will's a fast processor. I just really don't. I don't think he would do good on that test. I don't think Stroud would be elite on the test. I'm not saying he's going to be poor on the test. I would suspect Hendon Hooker, is that how they say it?
Hendon Hooker.
Hendon Hooker would be good on the test.
So Albert Breer from the MMQB tweeted, he said how we've referenced Bryce Young's S2 score. He said, quote, I'm told Kentucky quarterback Will Levis wasn't far off from Young on the S2 test with a score of 93. Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, Josh Allen aced the S2 tests coming out. So apparently Levis did really well on the S2 test.
And, you know, but when you watch his tape, you can't see it. Mm. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get this information and see it on the tape. Like, you know, there's times where you're watching him and you're like, can't you get over? We got to get over here. It's one of the things on Hooker. You know, you worry, is it going to all come? Because in that offense, it's so one side of the field. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be able to work it and process? And he's very accurate with the football. You know, he's very accurate with the ball. But I think that to me, you got to see it on the field. Like, I don't see Justin Fields being good in that, because even if you like Fields, he's not a quick processor on the field. He never was in college.
And like we've said, just because you do well on it doesn't mean you're going to be great.
Just because you run a fast 40 doesn't mean you're going to do good.
But if you do poorly, it's not a great sign.
That's not a good sign.
And for reference, Bryce Young, according to Albert Breer, scored a 98, which is higher than Burrow, Fields, Allen, who all scored in the high 90s.
Yeah, there you go. So I mean, it makes sense to me. I mean, I see it.
Yeah. I think the important thing is, like, if it matches what you see on the field. Because if it doesn't match, then you have to go back to the film and say, okay, what are we missing, or what didn't we see the first
go? And that's kind of what you're always trying to do in college scouting, is you're trying to find out things about the player, if you could have some clues. To me, that's where analytics plays a huge role, is when you study what great players do, and then you go back and see, does this guy have those traits? You know, like, you know, this guy is great, you know, offensive lineman. What's the trait that matters most? People think the 40 time doesn't. It does. Mm. Because when you're an offensive lineman, the reason we test 40 time for offensive lineman is, how fast can you get your second step on the ground? Everybody wants to watch the 49er. Oh, he's got quick feet. No, it's when he's run blocking, when he gets his second step, get on the ground quick. And you have to have quick feet to do that. You have to run fast to do that. Now, sometimes guys run bad 40s because they're out of shape. Yep. 40 is a conditioning test, really. It is. Nobody realizes it. Yep. But you got to be in shape to run a good 40.
I think that's, I'm so glad you said that, because everybody makes fun of it. Like, oh, when's the last time you saw a big person run 40 yards? It's like, that's, you're not seeing, you're looking at the surface, but underneath the surface is what they're actually testing. Is, yeah, are you in shape? Do you work hard? The same thing with the bench press. It's not like, nobody's ever bench pressing 225 in an NFL game, but it's, do you work hard in the weight room?
Right. I mean, and you talk about, and you play soft, and you have 12 benches. Now we know why you play soft.
Yeah, because maybe you're not the hardest worker in the weight room. Speaking of those offensive linemen, we do have the odds over at DraftKings of which lineman will be drafted first. And right now the favorite is Paris Johnson, the Ohio State offensive tackle, minus 115. Peter Skoronski, the Northwestern kid, plus 105. Darnell Wright and Broderick Jones at 7-1. And then Anton Harrison at 40-1. But what do you make of this O-line group in general? And who do you think is actually going to be the first one off the board?
I would take a shot at Broderick Jones. I think he's got a chance to be the first one. I think Paris Johnson, it plays a little softer. They're both really athletic. I think Anton Harrison is a really good player. He's a sleeper at 40-1. He's way too low. He's a really good player. He's going to go in the mid. He should go in the mid-teens. He's going to go somewhere in there. He's too good of a player. Darnell Wright is a good player. I think Darnell Wright has had some really tough challenges in his growing up that has affected him, not in a negative way, socially. He's a loner, kind of keeps to himself. Doesn't make him a bad person, but he's not a typical offensive lineman type of guy.
Kind of aloof, almost.
Pretty much. Likes to play video games. Again, nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying,
we love video games here.
This is the, you know, and so that's, but he's talented, and he, you know, there's moments where he doesn't play as talented as he is, a five-star kid coming out of high school. I mean, this is a really, you know, Skoronski, to me, is a guard.
Arm length? Is that the problem?
I think it's his arm length, you know. And so you could you play him at tackle? Probably. So the question is, which one is the best one? I mean, all these guys, to me, are better than Jonah Williams, who went in the first round. You know, are any of these guys Jonathan Ogden? No. Or else they would be going early. Any of these guys Anthony Munoz? No. I think the target here is they're going to go somewhere between, let's say, 9 and 17.
Okay. So would you say that the old linemen are one of the stronger groups in this draft class? Because I think a lot of people, we focus so much on the quarterbacks and then the edge rushers, that it's like, all right, what are the other strengths of this draft? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of blue chip talents, but there could be some guys who are pretty good that go a little
later. I think the strength of this draft is the tight ends and these tackles. Because I think Harrison, Jones, Paris, and Wright can all be starting tackles in the league. Now, will they be elite starting tackles? I think you have to kind of work your way through that. Are they blue chip starting tackles? No, but they can be starting tackles. And you've got to decide, is the value good enough to pick them at one if they're your left tackle, or would I be better off trying to take a kid like the BYU kid in a later round that I think I could develop into one? See, that's the value thing you've got. That's why you have a grading system.
Yeah.
I think tight end is really deep in this draft.
Yeah, and we've heard those tight end names be mentioned
a lot.
And
you can see Kincaid is now the favorite to be the first tight end pick. As I mentioned, I mean, Michael Meyer on tape is really, his TV tape was fun to watch. Junior year is way better than his senior year when you go back and study him. But to me, it's a little bit, he's good in a lot of areas. He's not great in any one. He's not a great blocker, which I thought he was going to be. Mm-hmm. And he's not really a great receiver on tape. I don't know if he gained weight his senior year. I don't, or his junior year. I don't know what it was, but the separation isn't there. You know,
he ran kind of slow at the combine.
He did. You know, he did. He didn't really run well. I mean, Darnell Washington actually is a more vibrant guy in the passing game than Mayer.
Dalton Kincaid also cleared his medical stuff. I didn't think there was a medical issue there for a little bit. I want to be a foot or an ankle, I want to say, but sounds like that's all good to go. The Utah tight end, he's now the odds-on favorite.
Yeah, and look, he's favorite over Meyer. I mean, you know, you get that. I would say the receiver from, I think the best receiver in this draft is the Smith. How do you say his last name?
Smith and Jigba.
And Jigba. But, I mean, the guy didn't play last year and didn't want to play. I mean, I think he could have played, and I think hamstring. He chose to, not to. He's the Zion Williamson hamstring. But Zion is, I mean, did you see Zion?
I saw him last night in street clothes.
He was, I mean, look how out of shape he looked. Like, he didn't work out.
I mean, he was wearing like a baggy sweatshirt, maybe, you know?
Why would he wear baggy? I wear baggy clothes because I'm fat.
He said baggy clothes and black.
That's what that's the motive. That's what you got to do.
You know what? As a not so slim guy myself, I could see where you would jump to that conclusion. But I'm going to give Zion a little bit of a pass.
There you go. There you got your bag.
I got my bag of excuses for Zion.
You got to get over to the Mob Museum.
I do need
to. You got
to
get over there now. I'm telling everybody that listens to this podcast.
I don't have time. I'm still trying to power through The Sopranos, man.
Yeah, well, keep going.
I'm powering through.
But you know, get over there. I'm telling everybody, like, if you love mob movies like I do, and if you love the history of the mob, and you love the characters in the mob. And I mean, they have the wall of where the Valentine's Day massacre, the actual brick wall that they got lined up against.
Wow.
With the ballistics testing in it. I mean, they have so much stuff in there. It's really just, it's a walk through a history that is incredible. And it's got the old time Vegas stuff in there. Mm-hmm. It's got the history of Vegas. It's got, you know, Casino, the movie, and they've got really pop culture. And then they've got a speakeasy down in the basement where you can go and have a drink and you feel like you're in the 1940s. You really do. Mm. They bring you out. I mean, Bill Berman had himself an old fashioned. And they brought it out in a book.
There you go.
So that, you know, it didn't look like he was having a drink.
That's awesome. I love it.
It was incredible.
Old-fashioned.
You got to get over there. I mean, it is truly, everybody says, well, there's so much to do in Vegas. No.
There's one thing.
There's a lot to do, but there's not a lot of good things to do. Right? I mean, like, you can't stay out in the sun all day long here in Vegas, right?
Nope.
I mean, Stadium Swim, you got to go that's great. But it's hard to spend 8 hours out in that sun at Stadium Swim.
No, you can't do it.
Spend 3 hours inside, get air conditioned.
Yeah. If you get air conditioned at the casinos, you might be out of a couple bucks.
Yeah, that's right.
But that does it for this week's edition of the podcast. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Thank you to all of you guys. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Keep pumping those numbers up. Keep reviewing. We love it. We see you guys. We love all the support. And also, thank you to DraftKings and to VSiN. I know, Michael, you got to get a show that you're about to start here, so I've got to get out of here. But thank you to you, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
Thank you, Femi. I'll see you Monday.